Hi, listeners. This is a quick thank you for listening and for your ongoing support. If you're enjoying the program, please consider clicking the follow or subscribe button if you haven't done so already. It really helps us out. There's no better way to support us than doing that or sharing the show with a friend, colleague, family member, or any new or expecting parent in your life. It's totally appreciated. On with the show. Hi, I'm Sarah Trott, and welcome to the Fourth Trimester Podcast. I'm a new mama, and this podcast is all about postpartum care for the first few months following birth, the time period also known as the fourth trimester. My postpartum doula, Esther Gallagher, is my co-host. She's a mother, grandmother, perinatal educator, birth and postpartum care provider. Fourth trimester care, our topic, is about the practical, emotional, and social support parents and baby require. And importantly, it helps set the tone for the continuing journey of parenting. Hello, listeners. It's Esther without Sarah today, sadly, but I'm on my own. But I have a fantastic guest. It's Beth Reese, who is a wonderful doula friend of mine and a wonderful herbalist who points her herbalism in the direction of the perinatal period. So I've been just dying to have Beth come on, and today she's actually made it. Before we start, I just want to remind listeners that you can subscribe to this podcast at fourthtrimesterpodcast.com. And we also have a Patreon page. So if you're willing and able, we would sure appreciate any kind of little sponsorship you're willing to do. This is all coming out of our pocket, mostly Sarah's. So it'd sure be nice to be able to reimburse her for her out-of-pocket expenses for this show. And if we ever get to the point where we can afford to, we'll augment our way of doing things with your kind support. So back to the podcast. Beth is going to give us a little professional introduction, tell us about her doula and herbalist background, and then we're going to launch in and talk about all things perinatal herbal. Okay. Hi, Beth. So lovely to have you.
Hi, Esther. Hi, listeners out there. Thanks so much for having me on the fourth trimester today. It's such a thrill to be on a podcast and being in such great company with yourself and Sarah, who I got to work with behind the scenes. And so yes, thank you.
Oh, I love this stuff. Thank you. Yeah. It's pretty fun.
I agree.
Yeah. So Beth, tell us a little bit about your professional background, sort of who you are, what led you to being an herbalist and a doula. What's your story?
Yeah. So what my deal is, prior to being a San Francisco resident, I had a career and life in higher education in and around the Santa Cruz, California area. And it was actually when I was working for the university at the Women's Center on campus that in one of my mentoring relationships with a student that she was describing what she was looking to be doing with her career. And she was talking about things like Ina Mae Gaskin and wanting to become a midwife and start doing doula work. And this was in like 2005-ish. And at that point, I had never heard the term doula. And so I did the question that we receive all the time is, what is a doula? And she described this support knowledgeable person that is part of the team to help accompany birthing, laboring, and postpartum people in their journey into parenthood and to help them during these big transitions with informational, practical, and emotional support. And I was like, whoa, that sounds really neat. And I think, yeah, we need that more. Because I had been prior working with a lot of families in really intense and even violent situations, doing a lot of domestic violence counseling and things like that. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, this is a way to help unpack some of that history before it even starts. And it synced up with my best friend becoming pregnant. And she was one of the first of us to start going down that path of motherhood. And she asked me to be at her birth. And me being the total nerd geek that I am was wanting to take a class on it because honestly, I was like, holy hell,
yes. This
seems, birth is huge and immense and I want to know as much as I can.
Yeah. And, you know, as you know, Beth, it's not something that we just absorb in our upbringings as women in this culture.
Exactly.
So we have to go to a source. We have to geek out if we want to know anything. Yeah.
It's so true. You know, gone are those days where we're sitting in circle watching folks birth and supporting them birth and helping them breastfeed their babies and being around that. And, you know, it really did create this place of me unpacking all of my stuff around like why I did burst into tears when I saw a birth happen on like on a video or something like that. I was like, because it is truly moving. It is truly a heart-opening event. So fast forward, had this amazing experience with my best friend that literally was a heart opening experience. Like I can still feel and see those, what it felt like to see my best friend's daughter crown. And it just shook me. And over the next subsequent years, I transitioned from that of a higher education professional to that of a sustainable professional doula, moved to San Francisco and have been actively working with families ever since then. The herb component found me while I was making that transition. And so I can say, you know, from experience, while also talking about all the lovely elements of incorporating herbal medicine into your own life, that it really is there to help support transitions. And it helped my transition into this of the birth world. And as a professional who is there to help support people nourishing themselves, the herbs themselves help nourish the professional. So it's this real beautiful dynamic of like this herbal education found me and I got to be trained with the clinical herbalists through the American School of Herbalism, which has transformed into a couple of different entities, but they're still going strong through many of the herbalists who are also acupuncturists that have really had this integrated approach of working with the modalities and herb knowledge basis of traditional Chinese medicine, as well as the herb allies that hang out in our neighborhoods. So those that grow in our regions and where we live, the California coastal / Sierra foothills area, all the way to, you know, how to work with herbs that we find only here, and then how just to know that this is a very localized approach, but working with the energetics and healing modality things that traditional Chinese medicine offers, so that you can think of like echinacea as something that has an energetic usage in TCM. So really,
Nice. So
that's the herbal background that I came from with my mentors and teachers, and have been applying that to that of the perinatal timeframe, where, like you were talking before, it's really about nourishment. This is the time of working with gentle giants and nourishing the mom and getting that time and space with getting to have built-in self-care rituals, like creating a tea for yourself or sitting in a herbal sitz bath or whatever it looks like for you as the person who's welcoming that into your life.
Yeah. Well, I know it's just a foundation of my practice as a doula, and I'm certain of yours as well, that each of the new mothers that I'm working with during the time that I'm spending with them in the first 2 weeks is every day going to have, you know, foods that are nourishing and teas that are nourishing, and where appropriate, an herbal sitz bath. Those are just the three things that are going to happen on my watch, in addition to sitting and listening, witnessing, sometimes advising, sometimes just supporting people in finding their best answers to whatever it is. So, so you can see, I think, listeners, that herbalism for, I'm imagining many doulas, even if it's just some very, very basic, fundamental, nourishing herbs, is a part of the care that we hope to bring to our clients and perhaps help them establish in their own self-care rituals for their days going forward for the rest of their lives, perhaps. I didn't know a thing about herbal care until I had my daughter. And then it came out of the woodwork.
And it's like, I always think of this stuff as like, you know, like Wizard of Oz going from black and white to Technicolor sometimes.
Yeah.
And,
that's lovely.
And herbalism, you know, sort of had that effect on me as well, seeing that with the families and people that we support, it, because these transitions really are as dramatic as going from black to white to a full color experience. And it's interesting that you say that you, you know, it came into being when you became a mother. Mm-hmm. And that's how this stuff happens. Like, we start, we're the first ones to sort of introduce it as a practice for ourselves, and then we're able to like carry that forward. And we can, and the herbs that are really nourishing, especially the ones that are listed in the notes, hint, hint, there are notes for this podcast if you want to follow up with specifics, because there's a lot of material to cover and we can't do it all right here, but that those are the gentle giants that are able to, and be used with kids.
Yes.
At a very young age, even working with the idea that for the first 3 months or so, any herbal medicine that's going to be brought in for the newborn often is going through the mother, meaning the mother is taking the herbs. Mm-hmm. The mother is helping them get to the baby through her breast milk or through the beneficial effects of these nourishing herbs, things like chamomile and nettles and milky oat and things that really can help a new parent's nervous system, as well as provide crucial minerals like calcium and magnesium, things that the body needs for the recuperation. And then, you know, once kids get and babies get more established beyond 3 months, and especially as they get closer to introducing solids into their diet, the world really opens up. And we know that there's different ways of taking herbs. You can take them internally and externally. So, you know, things that get used for like diaper creams or diaper salves for babies, there's stuff that frankly there I would never want someone to use. And then there's stuff that has herb in the formulation to actually help the diaper area heal. Yeah. Things like calendula, things like even Oregon grapefruit can help minimize candida levels, but that's for external use. Like, I want to be given those, except maybe the calendula internally, but that was, would be, you know, ways of introducing them slowly. Mm-hmm. And as you build confidence and get to know these herbs more, it's really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, let's just say that calendula is the foundational herb for this mother's sitz baths, because it's so soothing to skin and mucous membranes.
Yes.
So soothing. And, you know, your baby has just come through your uterus, vagina, and vulva, and those lady parts might be a little tender. But we also know that calendula, it makes a wonderful skin wash for any number of conditions. And Beth is now naming candida, which we sometimes think of as a yeast infection. And it's babies yeast. Sometimes get that on their bottoms.
Yep.
So rather than those, whatever's on those diaper wipes, you know, you can brew up a simple little infusion and swab your baby's bottom with it.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, if a partner has an ulcer, they can drink tea of calendula tea, and that would help the internally.
That's
and fantastic. So there's all these really cool applications depending on the person and what the need is and And it's not even that you have to get to know a ton of herbs. I mean, I think if you're totally into it, go for it. And what I was taught that I've really held on to is that getting to know a handful of herbs deeply is, and how they apply to all these different stages of life, is something that is worth your time and a very approachable gateway into this whole amazing world. Because we're, you know, to be fair, we're really talking about herbs that are both found and cultivated in this area and coming from a Western or a traditional Chinese medicine background. There's cultures of herbs all over the place. And mm-hmm. just to fully acknowledge that that's what we have to offer here. And there's also all these different worlds of herbs, depending on your background, where you're living, rural practices, and that there really are a lot of ways to incorporate this, especially in the postpartum time. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about what we're talking about, but there's a world out there.
I think of what a revelation it was for me to find out that so many of the East Indian culinary herb, you know, that we just enjoy when we go out for Indian food, you know, there's a handful of those that are very specifically used for very important transitions, as you're calling them appropriately, Beth, in terms of things like, you know, getting mom's milk production off to a good start and helping to heal and recover the mom physiologically. And this is what I loved about it, was saying, oh, but this is incorporated into everyone's food, right? Everyone eats right. these herbs because they're good for mothers. Like, it occurred to me, like, oh, this is part of the Indian diet because they're good for mothers. Mm. Whether or not that's yeah. sort of part of the explicit idea or lore or education that people get, it's like, oh, it's foundational to this ancient culture that things that are good for women mm-hmm. are good for everybody.
Yes.
Right. Now, I'm just making that up, but I bet you that, you know, this isn't far from the minds of Indian yeah. herbalists, you know, that, you know, we really want to protect the mother.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And nourish and the mother.
And nourish her, thereby
nourishing,
protecting the baby.
Right. And yeah. protecting the culture. And mm-hmm. and it's really elegant, obviously, mm-hmm. how this all interplays. But, you know, looking at herbalism as a real cultural need, as well as a part of how we sustain ourselves. Mm-hmm. And going back to this idea that a lot of these herbs are around helping the body nourish the basics in terms of helping with building strong blood vessels, mm-hmm. helping with general GI tract function, you know, making things smooth, helping things come out, helping with kidney function so that we are able to regulate all of our electrolytes. And so we have good heart function, and, you know, it goes on and on. Helping with blood pressure, helping with better sleep cycles, helping to sort of calm our nervous system into that. And that is really sort of the hallmark of these herbs, is that most of the time, these are going to be things that are helping the body fine tune its own innate ability to function mm-hmm. while having those medicinal properties attributed to these different classes and characterizations and classifications of herbs
yeah.
being these things.
And I imagine, Beth, you would say that it's no small thing that many of the applications for herbs that are both nourishing and healing are come to us in the form of teas, especially for new moms and babies.
Yep.
Because one component of keeping people healthy is keeping them well hydrated.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's often the case that a water source isn't necessarily completely clean. But by boiling that water and adding the herbs, which may also have, you know, an antibacterial in some cases component, mm-hmm. we're actually providing people with super nourishing, healthy, safe hydration as well.
Exactly.
And we in the West tend to, at the moment, take for granted our water sources and don't take near the advantage of them that we maybe could in terms of staying hydrated. And it is so critical for a pregnant woman, breastfeeding mother, infants and babies growing up to be well hydrated. Everyone needs good hydration. The elderly are in this country are chronically dehydrated, and it leads to memory dysfunction and everything else, right? So yeah. The fact that we can brew up a cup of tea and get all these benefits is pretty phenomenal. Yeah.
It really is. And it's really in line with some of the other really nourishing elements to parts of our diet that, like the making of a stock or a stew, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's, I think of a tea as pretty much a, you know, a type of stock or a stock as a type of tea, because we're mm-hmm. using water as the solvent to help extract the things that we want from it, either it simply being flavor, or we're looking to help extract, you know, the collagen, or we're looking to have the iodine from the seaweed come out, or whatever it is. And it's really accessible because, like you're speaking to, we as humans are usually in the pursuit of water. And water is that essence of life. And in the pregnancy, we increase our blood volume by like 1.5. And mm-hmm. because of all that, having something that's super accessible, like we need to hydrate ourselves, we need to drink water. Well, you know, if we were just talking before we started recording that, like, there's some folks that don't want to drink water, and we're like, well, if you make a tea, they might drink water because mm-hmm. it's still a non-caffeinated, non-sugar based drink that they're able to get hydration from in a very clean, easy way. And it's very accessible that way.
Not only that, Beth, I would say in some cases it's a superior form of hydration, because specifically what you've been saying about the mineral content, sometimes the water soluble vitamin content, you know, way, way, way back in the old days, most of our water sources would have been well mineralized, right? Because that rainwater yes. would be running over the rocks or seeping down through the soil
right. and into the watershed,
into the yeah. watershed, into the wells, into the and yeah. then coming back up in the form of springs. And that water would have healthy bacteria and minerals, all of which help our body absorb and hold that hydration. Mm-hmm. Pure H2O isn't a hydrating beverage per se. It's a nice solvent, but it doesn't necessarily stick.
Right.
Right. It might exactly. be a great flush for our kidneys and our liver, but it doesn't stick in the cells.
Right.
And so we need those very minerals that you were mentioning to be part of the component of the water that we're drinking. So people who are drinking filtered water, and some water is highly filtered, some is even distilled, there's no mineral mm-hmm. content right. in that. So there's a limit to the hydration you can afford yourself. So, you know, just simply using that water to extract the benefits mm-hmm. from those herbs is, mm-hmm. is a huge plus. And you can drink these things often hot or cold, depending on the best application. Right.
right.
Do you want to talk about heat and cold a little bit from your...
Yes. Your... So in terms of an approach for the postpartum timeframe, within many cultural contexts, but specifically within like traditional Chinese medicine, TCM, there is the importance of helping the mother maintain and regain her heat or her warmth to her constitution, because the act of childbirth is such an opening and a release of vital fluids like blood and water and shit, to mm-hmm. use a very, anyways.
Yeah, no. Anglo-Saxon, great Anglo-Saxon word,
yeah,
Beth.
Being real. So that... because and of the actual opening of the pelvic girdle with a baby coming through there, that opens the mother up to being susceptible to cold, inflammation, and the possibility of invasion from things like microbes or infections, and wanting to help the mother maintain and regain that heat by having the food, the teas, and even the herbs that she is ingesting or Z is ingesting, that there is a warming element to those things so that we're helping that person who's gone through this big transition maintain and sustain that warmth. Mm-hmm. And so many of these, what Esther was speaking to with tea and the temperature of tea, like the literal temperature of tea, we may want to really encourage someone to be drinking more of a warm, hot tea or even neutral. So like room temperature type
but
of
not
tea,
cold.
But not necessarily cold. I think this is where you really have to look at the metabolism and the constitution of the mom, because mm-hmm. there are some moms that are just really, really warm. Mm-hmm. And you know,
I've had some of them.
Some folks that are really, really warm, and
specifically even presenting with eczema and forms of excess mm-hmm. heat. Yes,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So with that, we have to always keep things like that in mind. The approach that I work with my clients, and because I'm their doula and not their clinical acupuncturist or clinical herbalist in many cases, I check in with them about what sounds good to them. Most of the time, it's maybe 0.5 out of 10, meaning that some folks say they want cold, but actually we get into it and warm often feels better, both mm-hmm. in the herbal sitz baths that they're applying to their perineum, to the teas that they are drinking, trying to have that more warming effect and bringing warmth back into the body, so that even things like postpartum organ prolapse is being addressed in a preventative function, because what we're looking at fueling the body to help maintain its own place. So mm-hmm. that uterus,
yeah,
while
that core,
that burner is staying in the right place for where it's supposed to be. While it's still going through its transition, don't get me wrong. Like the uterus is it has a journey, mm-hmm. and we want the body to have enough vital energy or chi to be able to maintain the appropriate place for where that person is in their recovery mm-hmm. or in their transition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lovely. I think, you know, I critique lovingly, I think, I hope, often the way we do birth in the West, in America specifically, where we keep people, where everyone assumes they're going to hospital because unfortunately they're not well informed about the home birth option. But so listen to our episode about why not home, people. And they spend a couple of days in hospital and then make the physical transition, you know, home right on day 3.
Right.
And with no support, right? That transition is just get yourself home. We don't need to see
good
you
luck.
Anymore. You're fine.
Yeah.
Good luck.
See you in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it occurs to me in hearing what you had just to say just now, Beth, that, you know, it could be a really powerful tool to have our birth clients, those of us who do birth, equipped with, you know, a particular tea and a big thermos. Mm-hmm. Because day 2 and 3 are such a major transition, even if you do not have to get into a moving vehicle, they're a big transition. Do you want to make any suggestions there, or just give us some ideas about the sorts of things that right off the bat are going to be a good thing to just have with you? And that, by the way, you'll have to plan for, since they're not available if you're having a hospital birth.
Hi, listeners. I have some exciting news to share with you today. We've partnered with Every Mother, your go-to destination for evidence-based exercise therapy regimens. Whether you're dealing with diastasis recti, preparing for birth, or navigating postpartum recovery, Every Mother has your back. With personalized daily routines tailored to your core and pelvic floor needs, they're here to support you every step of the way. Say hello to a stronger, healthier you with Every Mother. Visit their website today and use code 4thTrimester10 for 10% off your personalized regimen. That's 4th spelled out, F-O-U-R-T-H, trimester10 for 10% off, because every mother deserves the very best.
Yeah. So going back to what you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, of sort of like the trifecta of herbs sets that people sort of work with, like a pregnancy tea, mm-hmm. a postpartum / lactation tea, and an herbal sitz bath, mm-hmm. that pregnancy tea can be your entry point into herbalism usage during your postpartum timeframe.
It hits all those notes we talked about.
It hits all those
hydration, minerals.
Exactly. And it, you know, just as a rule, anything that you use and imbibe during pregnancy is safe for the postpartum time frame, especially with breastfeeding. So without having to go out and like get a totally new set, I would say a lot of my clients end up having like extra pregnancy tea, and they're like, what do I do with this? I'm like, you drink it still.
Yeah.
Because it has those nourishing herbs, and usually and the building blocks of the pregnancy tea are also the building blocks of the postpartum tea. And usually the two that we always see is a red raspberry leaf.
Mm-hmm. Known as a uterine tonic.
A uterine tonic.
Which is fascinating.
And actually,
we can talk about that.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then also nettles. And mm-hmm. those two we pretty much see in all postpartum teas, as well as all pregnancy teas.
And I would even just say to everyone out there that whether or not you have a uterus, nettles is such a mineral-rich, friendly herb. It's good for everybody throughout your life. Wouldn't you say, Beth?
Like, I really would.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the fact that it does have this history of being an herb, it also has this extensive history of being a food.
Yes, a vegetable.
And
yeah.
Foods we get Delicious. Nutrients from.
Mm-hmm.
And nettles is high in vitamin C, vitamin A, iron, and magnesium, and calcium. And so yep. you're like, mm-hmm. we're just going to drop the mic there and like, walk away. Because nettles really hits a lot of those notes.
And probably trace elements that we're, you know, we don't even have to know about.
Exactly.
I'm guessing. If it's growing itself on the kind of soil it likes, which it always does, mm-hmm. that's what it likes to do, then it's drawing from that soil those other elements that are also important to humans that we only get from our vegetables. Yeah.
Right. And if we're able to get it through these teas, I mean, I would say that one of my approaches for the new parent is go towards ease. You already have enough challenge and enough transition and enough difficulty. So, you know, go with what is as accessible as possible
mm-hmm.
for these things. So going back to that original question around preparing for that, you can create a labor aid or a labor drink
mm-hmm.
that is infused with those two herbs, the red raspberry leaf and the nettles, plus adding, you know, magnesium capsule in there, and then whatever flavor sounds good to you.
Squeeze a lemon
in there. Mm. Have some ginger, you know, whatever mm. really, whatever's sounding good. Like if you haven't been liking ginger, don't put ginger in there.
Maybe you're a licorice person.
Maybe you're
Would
a licorice person.
Okay?
Maybe you're a spearmint person. You know, any of those. Maybe you like blueberry. Yeah, any of that stuff. And you can, you know, make this drink that can be for labor, but also for that immediate postpartum time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always tell my clients in general is that anything that you use for the birth that you possibly don't use, you could use it during the postpartum mm-hmm. time frame.
For sure.
That yoga ball turns into a baby place soother, parent
yeah.
soother too.
Yeah.
Those maxi pads turn into, you know, maxi pads. I mean, yeah. the same thing, but you yeah. still need something to catch fluid. Yeah. So there can be that application. I would say one of the greatest herbs for the postpartum, in my opinion, is ginger, as well as that can be really wonderful for the pregnancy timeframe as well. Mm-hmm. Everything from working with seasonal colds and flus and allergies to working with helping warm the ligaments as the body changes and settle the stomach for the hormonal shifts and all the queasiness that comes with having someone sit on your vital organs. So
and grow bigger and bigger.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So if you're able to have some sort of ginger infused food or tea or something like that brought into you, and reach out to your local support network, meaning your friends and family, and be like, that would be a really great thing to have someone bring in. Like, can you bring in some ginger tea? Like,
mm-hmm.
very
yeah.
simple.
Simple thing to make.
If you want to see this baby, you gotta bring a thermos.
Ginger tea, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, again, obviously, if you don't like ginger, don't go towards that one. But it has this really wonderful usage for that. And then, you know, as you move forward, there's already this idea that, you know, you can be creating a broth or a stock that has ginger in its recipe.
Yeah.
And in some of the recipes that you see in the notes, there's other herbs in there like astragalus or wang chi, which I think I forgot to name as astragalus, wang chi is astragalus, which gets used in traditional Chinese medicine to help support the spleen and specifically with helping the spleen hold organs in place. So that...
Fascinating.
That, I know. It just like...
Well, can I just say?
Yeah, go for it.
Speaking from purely personal place, you know, for a year before I got pregnant with my daughter, I had mononucleosis. And when you look into what's affected, it's the spleen.
Right.
It's really affected by this blood-borne disease, a mucous membrane contact disease. And who knew? But you know, it occurs to me that something like that, that would not have been addressed and was not and will not be addressed by Western medicine, could have been the genesis for my perinatal depression and was never addressed, right? No one was saying to me, eat root vegetable stews, you know, build your blood.
Right.
And hey, by the way, there's this thing called astragalus and you can find it and it's everywhere. And you should eat it. I mean, to this day, I mean, I'm just learning this from you. I should have known, you know.
That's amazing. I knew some of the other things.
Yeah. But, you know, some of these things can affect us for the rest of our lives if not addressed.
And, and that's really why I think you and I and the other folks that are so passionate about maternal care, postpartum care, is that this stuff will show up if it's not properly nourished and addressed and sort of brought headlong unexpectedly in different stages of our life.
Yeah.
You know, like we want the new mother to rest and nest for 2 weeks after giving birth so that she's not the 55-year-old woman that has a prolapsed bladder, you know, down the road.
Yeah.
You know, because that is really what we know can happen and we want to really hold that dear and sacredly so that we are taking care of them in this way that is addressing these types of things. And so, you know, going back to the point that, you know, astragalus is one of these herbs, it's a root and you go, you can go into almost any acupuncture or herb shop, Chinese shop in the area, and they'll have these bags of astragalus, which looks basically like a tongue depressor.
It does. Yes. That's right.
Yeah. So very woody, perfect for stocks. And I'll just, you know, as a side note right now, it's always good to know the sources of your herbs, to know how they were treated,
where they're grown,
if they're fumigated, are they radiated? And so sometimes we do need to be aware of that if herbs are coming in from different sources that we don't have that information in. So go for the sources that you know of astragalus and any of these herbs really that are clean and something that you want to drink. But astragalus can be easily brought into a stock and you don't even have to think about, you know, taking it. And it can be part of this nourishing broth that can help with the integrity of your organs staying in place. It also has the ability of helping with sweating and sweating regulation, and something that we talk also about all the time that no one else seems to talk about is the night sweats. You know, postpartum folks get night sweats. They can, not to say everyone does, but it's one of those things.
It's common enough.
Yeah.
Because of the hormonal shifts in the first week, you're going from a period of fertility into a menopausal state. That's very normal and natural.
The absence of this hormone. Yeah.
Yeah. But the dramatic effect of it can sometimes actually require a kind of regulation, a kind of support to regulate, because, you know, sometimes it really isn't a set or, you know, sort of under I mean, I would say about myself, like with my first pregnancy, I probably needed more sweating than I had. And with the second, I was in a healthier place perhaps.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah.
So tell us about, so astragalus has a regulating effect.
It helps us sweat and move things efficiently without going into the deficit of sweating too much, if that makes sense.
Like some folks, can dehydrate.
You can dehydrate yourself really easily. You can create a scenario for having a chill if you're sweating too much and your temperature and internal thermostat is all over the place because of this new hormone balancing and regulation that's happening in GARD. So what astragalus does is help temper some of that excessive sweating that one might go through during this time frame. And like you were speaking to, sweating is really important for the regulation of hormone. And because, again, we are helping the new parent, you know, nest and rest with their newborn, because that's like what the newborn wants and that's what the postpartum body needs, we're not going out and sweating because we're walking down the street, or we're sweating because we're hiking up a hill, or we're doing a workout. So that ability to express hormone efficiently through the skin is really beneficial to the postpartum body. And things like astragalus and even ginger, if you're thinking of, you know, a recipe or something, you know, ginger helps us, it's a diaphoretic, so it helps us sweat. And so if you're working with something that helps you sweat, with something that helps you sweat in an appropriate way, that can be a really great combination for dealing with things like the night sweats. When, you know, I've had clients that for several weeks or even longer, they're just, you know, sleeping on beach towels and, you know, we get into the rhythm, and not to say that, you know, that's totally needed and that's totally fine, but being able to support with some of this other stuff to make it a little bit easier.
Well, I could imagine a scenario where it would be, I mean, I don't imagine that there's a single postpartum woman who wouldn't benefit. You know, it's often the case, Beth, that our clients have been on IV fluids for long periods during the course of their labors.
Yep.
And that, you know, they come home with still an excessive amount of fluids in their tissues. And that does need to be processed out through the kidneys, you know, and through a certain amount of sweating, no doubt. And I could imagine that there again would be a place where the ginger and astragalus would be very, very beneficial to help the body do this task that is normal to postpartum, because we do have extra blood volume and fluid in that transition, right? We gained it during pregnancy and now we're divesting it in very many different ways, including by breastfeeding. But then when you have this overload that many women have as a result of their birth story, their birth journey, I could imagine that would be really, really, really helpful. So that's wonderful to know about both of those things. And as you know, in many cultures where ginger is part of the landscape, it's part of what everybody drinks all the time.
Yeah. So, and I think it's just, you know, fascinating, because I think, you know, Esther and I both come from a cultural anthropology background. And I know a lot of fine herbalists out there that come from a cultural anthropology background. And what you start seeing, especially if you use food or herbs or plant medicine as the lens that we're looking through, most cultures have some type of basic herb-infused dish that includes like protein and a multigrain.
Yeah.
You know, so where we see the rose con pollo, or we see the ginger and rice chicken dish, congee, you know, these are things that really represent
Madras or
exactly. So, any of the, like a barley and lamb soup, you know, something of that, or of that nature, that those components.
Oxtail. With oats.
Exactly. They're both things that are densely nourishing as well as help stabilize blood sugar.
Yeah.
You know, things that can go for a longer burn in the metabolism.
Yeah, right. So important. I mean, one of the reasons I try to get my families doing, you know, small meals often is to help with that blood sugar component of the endocrine system.
Right.
So that we're not adding, you know,
blood sugar stress right, your body.
To all exactly. the other shifts that are happening.
Right.
Yeah. That's great. So Beth, we're actually going to have to sadly wrap up pretty soon. Do you want to spend a few minutes talking about herbalism around the subject of breastfeeding? Because I know mm-hmm. for our clients, they're hearing prenatally, they're hearing all kinds of stories about what gets called lactation, which, as you know, I have a gut reaction to that term. We're breastfeeders. We're mammals. They're mammary glands. It's true that lactation is a nice, you know, Latin-based word, but we're not machines that do this thing.
Right.
But I also know that there's a way in which our both pregnant and then newly postpartum moms mm-hmm. are in a position to misinterpret how to use these herbs that are being thrown at them.
Yep.
And that there's some, I think, fundamental information that you can impart about sort of how to make maybe some good decisions. And by the way, one way to make a good decision is to employ, you know, a perinatal herbalist to help you assess your situation and make good decisions. So if you're really feeling overwhelmed and clueless, please look out into your community and find somebody who specializes in this way, mm-hmm. as does Beth. But Beth, why don't you just tell us a little bit about some of those very popular herbs that come in every tea that people buy at the shop that might need a little bit of, I don't want to say caution, but just understanding.
Yeah. And I just want to sort of highlight what you are gleaning to around the fact that not everyone needs a breastfeeding or a lactation tea. Mm-hmm. I would say that what I am advising my clients and talking about, like, what sounds good to them, it can make sense to have a lactation tea for those first several days as they're learning, the parent is learning, as well as their care providers are learning what their milk supply, what their flow is like, what their baby is like, all these components. Mm-hmm. And having that tea around can be really beneficial as things are shifting and increasing in supply. So mm-hmm. when milk is starting to shift and increase on supply on in and around day three, that point we'll sort of know if you need these herbs called galactagogues or herbs that support lactation, breastfeeding, milk production. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can sort of assess whether it makes sense to continue to use it or not. Because mm-hmm. if you are working with oversupply, we really don't want to be working with a lactation tea, because where a lactation tea tends to build upon, say, the components of a pregnancy tea, because again, like we were talking about, like most of the time, these postpartum teas also has nettles, also has red raspberry leaf, because they're talking about the full constitution of the mom, including the uterus, including mammary health, that they also include often sometimes things like fenugreek. And mm-hmm. fenugreek ties back into that conversation piece that you brought up around Ayurvedic and Indian herbs that are infused into the daily life of people who are eating these herbs on a daily basis. But for folks that aren't necessarily eating this on a daily basis, we can have a certain level of newness to the herbs. And the element that fenugreek has on the body is to maximize and increase the receptors that milk can be made. Mm-hmm. And for folks that...
Those prolactin receptors.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if someone already has a ton of those, we don't necessarily need to be boosting that. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, help bring in a clinical eye or a critical eye, seeing the ingredients of the tea, so that if it has fenugreek, just know that it has fenugreek. And if you have an oversupply, then, you know, probably switch out and even just drink a pregnancy tea would be fine, mm-hmm. or any herbal non-caffeinated tea outside of things like peppermint or basil tea, which I don't know, a lot of people drinking basil tea, but things that possibly could dry out milk supply, and peppermint is
sage.
One. sage.
I don't know why anybody would drink sage tea. It's nasty, but but yes.
It's strong,
would,
right?
You would
it's
drink like, it if you're trying to dry up a milk supply.
You would be
that
drinking
would be
it
the
to dry up
the
supply. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that, like as with most things in life, there's a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. And most folks are in the middle with a, you know, in the bell curve of the spectrum or, and then there are folks with little supply and a lot of supply. And for the folks that are really working hard to boost their milk supply, I think it is a really good idea to be working with a breastfeeding tea because that's a case where we are trying to really increase mom hydration, increase the general nutrition and nurturing of the mom, plus having things like the fenugreek or the blessed thistle or things like fennel in there to help increase milk supply on that way. But I think what I often see too is people already planting the seeds of fear in the pregnant folk of like, breastfeeding is going to be really hard. And I'm really not trying to oversimplify the intensity of having someone depending on your mammary juice as being really intense in many ways, but that it's already really hard and you need this product.
Right, you have to medicate yourself because you couldn't do it otherwise.
You need,
it's not the truth of it.
You need to have formula at home just in case.
Right. Yeah, it's the same mentality.
It's an intervention. It's the idea that you will need an intervention.
Right.
So
we can afford to wait and see and see how you're doing and assume that because you're a mammal, it's probably going to work out.
Right.
And it's nice to have support, but let's have the support that's appropriate.
Right. And I think that's often what gets substituted in. It's like this idea that I can have this herbal supplement that is supplementing support. Mm-hmm. Which isn't, you know, and
it's not the same to have a reassuring doula or instead of that, you know, a box of tea from a name brand company that says you're going to make milk if you drink
right.
it.
Or you have
that's
your
not support.
Yeah. Or you have this bottle of fenugreek. And what I see some folks doing is just taking it with the expectation that it's there to help milk supply, which it does, but it does it in this very specific and an even more intense way because it helps increase the areas that can create milk.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone
it's
who doesn't.
It's lactogenic. It actually makes you have more cells.
Right. And you see you see that with any of the things that have that anise or fennelly licorice flavor is that camphor or that biomedical element, the anaphor, I believe it is, that it actually mimics estrogen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it has an effect on our endocrine system to boost and stimulate that. So again, not everyone needs that. And not everyone needs to start taking tons of capsules of fenugreek.
Quantities.
And it just is, you know, again, something where you're already so busy during the postpartum time frame, parenting and, you know, taking care of yourself when you can, that, you know, taking a handful of fenugreek three times a day is another thing you got to do.
Right.
And that's where I do hold a place of wanting people to have education around things like fenugreek so that if you are going to be taking fenugreek, you're taking it in a way that you know how much you're taking.
Yeah.
So that maybe it is in a single capsule form or it is in a formulated form, meaning that it has, it's part of a formula. It's not mm-hmm. just fenugreek.
Yeah,
so there's
a little bit
more balance to things going on.
Yeah. There are other elements that are balancing.
And under the support of someone like a lactation consultant, a perinatal herbalist, an acupuncturist, a seasoned doula, folks that has seen how this works, as well as know the research around it
and the physiology.
The physiology around it and can really help what is needed for that family and for that mom.
Yeah.
So that you're just not trying to, you know.
Yeah. And let's be clear, we don't want to discourage anyone who may lack for community support from doing some good research about their particular situation, because both Beth and I know from personal experience that our healing journeys were initiated from ourselves.
Right.
Right. We knew that there was something that needed addressing, and we looked out into the world and tried to educate ourselves about what would be a good way to do that. And so we encourage that. And we also, you know, also from that same vantage point and all of our, you know, education experience, know that, you know, you just don't pick an herb and throw a ton of it at a situation, right? You want to have a broader perspective than that, if possible. Well, Beth, this has been amazing. So much great information and perspective from you. Would you like to tell our listeners how to contact you if they're interested in your services?
Sure. So folks can find me online at mindfuldoulaarts.com. I also, you know, have a Facebook page that is under the same name that you can find my contact information and also email me through that website as well. And I would welcome anyone who wants to contact me or even talk more about this in the capacity. I mean, as proven, we could talk about this for long amounts of time.
And oh, yes.
Really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk and be part of the fourth trimester with all you lovely folks out there.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, yeah, thanks again, Beth. And I'm imagining too on our fourth trimester podcast Facebook page, this is going to really spark some wonderful comment back and forth as well. So people, please find your way to our Facebook page when you get a chance. We're going to sign off now and thank Beth one more time and hope that all of you out in our listenership are having a really, really wonderful time, perinatal period. Tell your friends about this. And I just want to remind you, not just your friends who are in the perinatal period of life. This is good information for people who may never have children of their own. This, in order for them to be supportive community members, whether that's your sister or sister-in-law, or, you know, the guy who lives next door and likes to work on trucks out in his driveway. Like, everybody could benefit from learning about this part of human existence. Okay. Take care, everybody.
Be well.
Be well.
You can subscribe to this podcast in order to hear more from us. Thank you for listening, everyone, and I hope you'll join us next time on the fourth trimester. The theme music on this podcast was created by Sean Trott. Hear more at soundcloud.com/SeanTrott. Special thanks to my true loves, my husband Ben, daughter Penelope, and baby girl Evelyn. Don't forget to share the fourth trimester podcast with any new and expecting parents. I'm Sarah Trott. Goodbye for now.
Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing all that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I'll sing a song for you. You got your wheels, you got your gears. You ride around town without any fear. You got your pedals, you got your brakes. You always wear your helmet for safety's sake. You can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you. Hello again, Bicycle Man. I know you're doing the best that you can. I wrote the song, simple and true. I wrote the song, I sing a song for you.